Hey everybody, before we start the show, wanted to let you guys know I have a brand new web series out. It's called Sheer RL, and it's recreations of MTV's TRL with people like Kumail Nanjiani, Randall Park, Thomas Middleditch, Katie Lowes, Terry Crews, Joe Latrullio, tons and tons of people all recreating classic moments from TRL. We have Breck Gelman as Marilyn Manson, John Daly as Fred Durst, Casey Wilson as Celine Dion. You got to check it out. You can go to on YouTube and watch it there, or just go to my Twitter page, at Paul Scheer. You'll see all the links. Definitely check it out. I think you'll like it. Probably the most realistic portrayal of what it's like to hang out at Marlon Brando's house. We saw The Island of Dr. Moreau, and you know what that means.
Schwarzenegger grow a baby in his belly, rock a rhinestone vest while ripping Justin to Kelly, or maybe see a burlesque show with Nick Crow and take a boat with speed to hitting cruise control. J-Man, Big Paul in the beautiful June, gonna take you from the goob all the way to the room. Randy Games and Street Fighter helped to blow off steam, just a sucker punch the odd life of Timothy Green. Sharknado, the Birdemic, how we staying alive, they call it in the badass and he's on the line, cranking 88 minutes cause they cool as ice, cause a bad Jim Varney looking kind of nice. Paul and June getting literal, Jason is getting laid, June is making sure all the monkey shots getting paid, they judge a bunch of movies while they're making the grade. Here's a real question for you, how did this get made?
Hello people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made. I am your host Paul Scheer, joined in studio by one of my co-hosts, not two, just one. And I bet if you were thinking right now, you would say, it's Jason. You're wrong. It's June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm great. How are you, Paul?
Very good. People have thought you've been kidnapped. Is that true?
No.
Okay. You are not kidnapped. You are here. You're in studio. And for what a great film.
Oh, guys. Gosh.
You're really rusty. You gotta get you back on your studio skills.
So happy to be back for this movie.
Well, we also are joined by a very special guest. He is an actor, a comedian, writer, director, Alex Fernie. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hello.
We're very excited. Now, Alex, we were working on something and you said, I need to come on your show and do this movie. So this was your pick 100%. It's been a movie that I thought about for a very long time. I never had the stomach to watch.
This is a movie that I remember I saw it with my dad in 1996 when it came out, and it is the movie
in 1996,
and it was, I remember having the realization that movies can be bad. I remember being like, oh, like, people can make horrible movies, and that
was
really
true, because when you're a
moment.
Child, I mean, just to me, to watch a movie was
a great
just a great there was no, I mean, it was just,
it
they
was
were
like,
all great.
Movies I loved and boring movies, but even then, as a kid, I was like, well, great. It's just a boring movie. This was, I was like, this is trash.
I think I remember that with Last Action Hero, being disappointed I didn't get it. I've heard it is better now, maybe, but
I just rewatched it like 6 months ago. Yeah. I was shocked at how watchable that was.
Okay, you see, that's interesting. And Major League, one of the major leagues, I think it was a two or three that I saw and I was very upset by. Do you remember when you had that first moment?
Well, I remember I watched Grease 1 and Grease 2 over and over and over again, like burned those VHS tapes. And I remember someone saying, well, Grease 1 is so much better than Grease 2, and feeling like, well, like, hurt by that. And also like movies can be better than other movies. Like they're all amazing.
You should discuss Grease 2 with my fiancée, Deborah, because it's one of her favorite movies.
I think Grease 2 – well, it's so hard. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer is so...
it's a classy gender swap.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's just... she's so beautiful in it that... I don't know.
Wow.
I love
right.
it, too.
Well, we are talking about The Island of Dr. Moreau. And just for you those who are wondering, Jason is not here. As a matter of fact, just to quickly do some housekeeping business, between the next 2 months... all three of us are not going to be in the same country at a certain point. So we're going to try to get as many people together for this podcast as we can because we want to keep them going. So that's that. All right, Island of Dr. Moreau. This is how IMDb describes the movie. After being rescued and brought to an island, a man discovers that its inhabitants are experimental animals being turned into strange-looking humans, all of it the work of a visionary doctor. So that's it. That is the movie in a nutshell.
Sure.
I would say,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie to me is an exercise in people going, I don't give a fuck. Like, and it's almost so blatant. Like, Brando at this point clearly doesn't give a fuck.
No, Brando like laughs through several scenes where he's just smiling and just sort of being like, I don't know.
There's a famous story about Brando in this movie that he had an earpiece in, and they would feed him the lines via earpiece, and it would sometimes pick up.
I've heard that he always did that.
Later, he did that. Oh. Like, he was often like writing his lines down and putting it on cookie jars and stuff like that. But like, this is on an earpiece. This is, I think, the beginning of the earpiece era. And he would occasionally pick up police scanners. And so David Thewlis, who is the man that they bring to the island, said that in a scene he would go, there's a robbery at Woolworths. Thinking it was a line for the movie. So that's that. You got that level.
I would have loved to see that movie where there was a Woolworths on,
on this weird island.
So we have him not giving a fuck. We'll get into him. Val Kilmer, like... Not caring. Mm-mm. Not caring at all. To the point I feel like...
I don't know about that.
You don't think so?
No, this is peak Kilmer. Because he's already done... He just did Batman. Yeah, he just did like Tombstone. He's like, this is most famous Val Kilmer. And then he comes and does this. And you just see something in his eyes of like, no. I will not listen
to you. Gosh, guys, I didn't feel that way.
Really?
Really?
No, I didn't feel that way.
How about the part where he just cut to me and puts a flower in his mouth? Like, you could tell. He's like, I'm going to do this.
I thought those were choices. I mean, I thought it was wild and crazy, but I find him so watchable.
But he's also so watchable. He spends the entire movie dressed like the sketchiest scuba instructor in Honolulu. Like, he's just like, you know, he's going to help you put on the tank and just touch too much.
Yeah, just like, hey, let me get under that that bra line.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get into him kissing those creatures.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. okay. And then, and just to answer your question, June, Val Kilmer did sign on to this movie as the man who was going to be brought to the island.
That makes sense.
And then decided he wanted to switch roles after he was getting a divorce. And then when he got the set, he's like, man, I want to be in the movie 40% less than I am in the movie. So,
no.
Yeah. So he did not give a fuck. And then David Thewlis, who I feel like is...
Miscast.
Wow. There we go. Right out. But yeah, I mean...
Ultimately.
Yeah. I don't think the right casting exists. I don't think there's anybody to be like, ah, oh, that person made that movie.
I actually think Val Kilmer in that role would have been great.
I agree. Well, by the way, speaking of miscast, it was cast originally as Rob Morrow, but Rob Morrow left the movie. He's like, I'm out of here. This is crazy. And left after 3 days of filming. One of many people who tried to escape the filming of this movie. They also caught Fairuza Balk at an airport. Now, you got to come back.
They had to bring her back.
So, like, this is the caliber of movie that we're talking about.
People fled the movie. They fled. They tried to escape the movie.
There is a documentary, which there's a few facts that we'll be pulling from. The documentary is called Lost Soul, the Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau, that details a lot of these stories. One being that the original director, Richard Stanley, worked for 4 days, was driven mad by Val Kilmer, so much so that he moved in with a paralyzed man on this island and then decided to disguise himself as a mutant monster and just watched the movie from that perspective. So there's a lot of crazy shit going on behind the scenes, which then I would go, well, now what's going on in front? And what's going on in front
is just as wild.
It does not... Really, I mean, this is a simple movie. I mean, a simple tome. It's a classic thing of literature,
also,
right?
Like, it's a movie that doesn't make sense why someone wanted to make it in 1996. Because when H.G. Wells wrote the book, I was reading about this, was like there was like all the rage in Victorian England was just vivisecting animals. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was a problem. Like, people in London were just like, oh, they all gather around and they like cut open animals and like fish around in there. And people were being like, this is awful. We shouldn't do this. And that was the world in which he wrote this book. So it's a natural progression of something that was going on. Then you cut to 100 years later and it's like, why are they making a pig lady? Like, what's happening here?
Well, I think the end, not to be a spoiler, but the end really hammers home the point that men are animals and animals are men. I mean, that's basically what they're trying to hang their hat on at the end of the day, which, and this is what I don't even understand. From just to get it to basics on plot, is he turning animals into humans or humans into animals?
Great cue.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No idea.
I have no idea.
And it seems both.
The plan in the movie, there's a moment in the movie where I believe the filmmakers think a twist just got dropped.
Yeah.
And I can't for the life of me figure it out. It's where David Thewlis is like, they needed my DNA. Yeah. And then you're like, for what?
For what?
To what end did they need this DNA?
Okay,
and they never explain it.
I think that they needed his DNA. My guess would be that they needed his DNA to reverse the process of Brando's daughter becoming an animal.
But Brando's daughter, well, now, was she already an animal that he had turned into a person? Or was she a person that he was...
Because, I believe she was a person that was being turned into an animal.
Well, no, because
why,
he said...
I have no idea.
Because at a certain point when Brando's having that conversation, which is the reason I had to watch most of this movie in subtitles, there was a part in the movie where he said, I believe he said, my son is an alligator, or my alligator is a son. And I went back and rewound it, and it was not that. He goes, I'm allergic to the sun. But I was like, his son is an alligator? So, but
which
I thought
it could have
worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he says, like, she's like, it's wearing off, and she was going back to being an animal. I don't think so. I think that's why they got David Thewlis' DNA.
But then why? So presumably, if we take this movie at face value, then Dr. Moreau somehow found out that David Thewlis existed.
Right.
Sank a ship he was on.
Or a plane.
Crashed a plane. Let him float around in the ocean for a number of days.
While
two other people murder each other. They die. That happens. First thing that happens in the movie.
Yeah.
Then they pull him into this place. Take their sweet time to get his DNA. Sort of dicking around with this dude.
By the way, they could have gotten his DNA on the boat immediately.
Or
he was
passed out.
Sincerely,
they probably could have asked him. They probably could have said, hey, listen, man. Can we have some of your DNA to help my daughter? And he would have been like,
just
yeah,
a strand
of
hair. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit of DNA. That's all we need.
I got to say that I'm not on the side of David Thewlis in this, because at every point they're like, hey, man, stay in here. Be cool. He does not be cool. He's never cool. He is breaking out at all times. He's like, get me a vest and get me out of here.
But why? God loves vests. What's weird about the end of the movie is that he finally escapes on a raft.
Oh, yeah.
But – if he had wanted to, he wanted to leave so much earlier, and that never seemed to be an option. And nothing happened in the movie that where he was able to figure that out. Like, oh, I'll make a raft. It was just like, oh, and at the end of the movie, he just
movie
takes
had
off
to end.
I mean, gotta leave.
The movie can't keep going on.
And by the way, the thing that I love about him at the end is like he's kind of sad. Like, I hate to leave you guys.
He didn't really want to go.
He didn't want to go. Well, he was like Dorothy leaving Oz.
The development they make, too, for him, like, I wrote this down. One of the first lines he says, like, he's talking to Kilmer, and he's, like, asking him about him. And this is how he explains who he is. He says, I'm working for the United Nations on the peace settlement.
I wrote that down, too.
That's
it. Peace settlement.
On the peace settlement. That's
it. The big peace settlement.
Yeah, the peace settlement. That's what he's working. He's working on the United Nations on the peace settlement. You get it, right? We don't have to talk about me anymore. Okay, great. Let's get to some animals. That's it.
This movie does that a lot. Like, Marlon Brando literally says, like, I can't explain to you what I'm doing. Like... And then they don't. They never explain it. He's like, no, I could never do that to you. He goes, I can't explain to you what I've been doing in 17 years and 17 minutes. So we'll do none.
Yeah.
We'll do none of it. Because then there are things on this island, because he's got these people he calls his sons. And they're like monkey people in tuxedos that are like servers. And then he's got like this midget who is neither.
I can't even.
The world's smallest man.
Yeah.
Which is another crazy Brando story of he showed up and insisted.
Yes.
That this,
wait,
the
that was
world's smallest man.
I was waiting for this reveal for you.
Yeah, that's a real person.
Yeah, you did not know that.
Man.
And Marlon Brando insisted he has to have a bigger part. I want more and more and more of him. Which, like, if you're an actor and you show up and you're like, I really think my character would wear a hat, that's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, he showed up and the director had to then figure out a way to include not just a friend, the world's smallest man more in the movie.
And the world's smallest man.
God.
I know, this is upsetting to you. I knew you thought he was like a puppet.
Did you think he was a puppet?
I did.
Yeah, no, he's the guy that, was it Nomar used to have around, like the baseball player? He used to like have him like sit on his shoulders and stuff?
Yeah,
he's passed away.
He's naked. He was naked there. And that was the most uncomfortable scene for me, the world's smallest man, when they were kind of bathing that little dude. I didn't like that. I didn't like that at all. June is really having a response to this. What is happening?
Oh, he's so small. Guys, he's too small.
He's very small.
Well,
he's so small. He's so small. He's so small.
I want to take a picture of this and let people see what you're going through right now.
So small.
Wait, what's the? What do you go? Talk us through it.
Yeah. He's so small.
Do you want to know more about it?
Yeah.
I believe he was born in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
I think he lived into his 40s. Like he lived for better than you would think. Was fairly famous for a number of years. He would show up on Sabadell Gigante.
Yeah, he would kind of dance around and stuff. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. He did okay. He had a pretty good life.
It sounds like it, and that's great.
Yeah, he got to be little Marlon Brando in the movie too. That's pretty – he is, I feel like, when people do remember this movie, they remember two things. They remember the fact that Marlon Brando wore whiteface for most of the movie, and they remember that dude.
Well, by the way, the reason why he wore white –
By the way, I will say I thought he did a great job.
The Little Man.
I thought he did a great job.
So you must have liked him as a puppet, and now as a real person, you're really impressed.
I didn't think he was necessarily a puppet. I thought he was – and I feel badly because I support little people actors 100%. I think I – because he was also in a sort of reptile weird skin and stuff, I just thought he was – some sort of animatronic. I did think maybe there was a tiny person somewhere in there, I didn't know.
And he did have makeup on. He did.
Yes, he was. So he had a lot and he was very famous for dancing. You're right. He died at 38 in Rhode Island. And he had a wife and a 9-year-old son. So, you know, he really lived a good life.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good for him.
But speaking of, again, like going back to Kilmer for a second, when we first meet him, this guy is like, out of the Carrot Top prop bin. I feel like everything, every choice is like Walkman in the pants, you know, and I was reading up and like going, trying to figure out, I was like, why is he wearing this like-
The arm brace?
The arm brace. Mm-hmm. And I guess the reasoning is that he is a drug addict, a heroin addict, and he is covering up his track marks. Although, because at the end of the movie, he's tossing out, you know, just medicine. No, not medicine. I think he's tossing out, like, drugs to whatever, all the like mutants. The,
I he's getting them all high.
Ultimately, what Dr. Moreau might have been doing is sort of, as we're talking about it, is, like, just, like, making the divide between animal and human really unclear so that over the course of time, humans are becoming animals and animals are becoming human. And what he was trying to do was to find that species. I mean, animals are humans, obviously, but that species that was...
I would take issue with what you just said. Yeah, me too.
I'm sorry, humans are animals.
I was getting ready to see where we were going to go
animals,
on this.
Obviously, but I think he was trying to sort of blur the lines between the two and see.
So you're on his side. You agree with what you're Moreau a Moreau.
Yeah,
you're a Moreau.
No, I'm not a Moreau.
Well, you seem like you're.
Yeah, you
I'm
really
not a Moreau.
Would you do this?
Of course not. I was so upset to see those animals being tested on and treated that way. That animal, you know, I feel that
or humans.
Not so much. No, of course I was. It was very upsetting.
One thing,
very very upsetting
about this, and I didn't know this until I was reading about it. This movie was. Came out in 1996. Were you aware it took place in 2010?
Oh, no, did not.
No.
The movie gives you nothing to let
not
you know
even,
that.
Not even on the screen says 2010.
There was one line where, like, it's the line you said before about, like, I've been doing this for 17 years, and there's something before where you saw, like, he had been in the States, like, in the early.
Oh.
It's like, that doesn't make sense. And then I looked online, and, like, somewhere on Wikipedia is, like, in the year 2010. This is so it's supposed to be this futuristic thing,
well, that
and the movie
pay.
Does not bother to clue
not
you in
at
any
all.
Way, shape, or form.
I mean, Brando, I feel like whiffing on his lines. And I think that's the character you don't want to be like nonchalantly. Because I feel like everything that he's saying, he's just sort of like, no, I won't say that. Or maybe I will say that. Like he's being the most coy.
And what's interesting too about it taking place in the future is like so many of the things there looked dated for 1996.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
His necklace where he controls the implants in the animals is like a rotary phone. Like it looks so – it's on like a coral chain and – doesn't look like it was up to date for 1996.
No.
Yeah.
And the technology is not – they didn't try to make it look futuristic.
The only futuristic room is the room where they peek into for just a moment, just a tiny bit where you see – I don't know what that was. A woman giving birth?
Woman giving birth.
Yes, to a human baby.
No, I think it was another hybrid baby. I think that's what the deal was. I think they were injecting – animal or animals or people with like mixed DNA. So then the baby that they would have would be both. And then that was how they were making these things.
And then the idea would be that these animals would then go off and live a beautiful life.
Very unclear what the next thing.
Because I mean, because
well, he was trying to create a place where nobody killed anyone.
See, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah. He was still torturing them on a consistent basis with like these electroshocks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm fuzzy on the science. I'm fuzzy on what he was doing. Like, because I mean, basically, once these animals like realize that they have like this little chip inside of them that they can kind of control everything, they just take over Planet of the Apes style
instantly.
Yeah, and just like, oh, now we're also, the leaders, and we'll start hurting you.
Here's what's so weird about their takeover: like, why do they need guns?
Yeah,
yeah.
Why? They rip Marlon Brando to shreds. Like, to shreds.
By the way, Marlon Brando is in this movie for like three scenes.
Yeah.
Three scenes.
Yeah, he's dead like 20 minutes in. But then there's like this whole plan on behalf of the animal creatures to get like to the arsenal to get the machine guns and find out where it all is. But why would they need those?
Well, to me, it's like, again, why do they need to – this is my biggest issue with it. They're like, we got to burn the dock.
Why?
There's only two humans on the island. And one is kind of you, and the other one, you know, it's like we're like there's no infestation of humans. They would totally hunt
and
these guys.
By the
down.
Way, when they burn that dock, that wooden dock blows up like it is just stuffed full of dynamite. There are electrical sparks shooting out of that dock. It's insane.
And I never really understood the relationship between Brando and Kilmer.
Mm-mm.
Don't understand what he did.
No
versus-
idea.
Well, there was a thing, too, talking about like, the making of it. Like, Kilmer was really excited to work with Brando, as I think anyone would be, even in late Brando. And Brando had no interest in working with Kilmer.
Hated him.
And cut most of their scenes together. And there's, I think, like one real scene where it's just the two of them. And it's where you can really – because Brando and Kilmer both insisted on like throwing out the script a bunch and just improvising. And it has – this is my favorite line in the movie because this is the scene where it's Brando looking through a microscope and Kilmer like walks in and Brando says – this thing is turned entirely yellow. And Kilmer goes, yeah. And that's it. That's the exchange that they have. It's never explained what they're looking at, whether or not it's good that it turned yellow, what that means. And it's so clearly just horrible improv 101 of
well,
this thing has
down.
Turned yellow. Yeah.
It was like this is an improv movie. This is like a bad improv. Like it's like you're watching like Home Improvement or something. Yeah. Like it's like
Well, even some of the structure of the movie though, like they go to great lengths to set up that Marlon Brando is allergic to the sun. So I thought for sure when the animals got him, he was gonna be taken out into like direct noon sunlight and fried to death.
I think it's just it was just his improv, like all that, because like most scenes started with Marlon Brando going, oh, I don't like the heat. It's so hot out, which is like what a horrible improv scene starts as. Like,
weather.
Can you believe how hot it is? Oh, boy. Like he just kept doing that.
And by the way, the reason why he wore the pot on his head was because he was genuinely hot and he wanted to be cooled down. So he calls it his caloric converter. He's just picture this Marlon Brando who is only draped. He's not dressed. Yeah. He's draped. at one point, he looks like he's just wearing a green screen.
Yeah, there's not a seam to be found.
No, he's wearing muumuus. Like, he is full-on muumuu at this point. And he is wearing a pot on his head. And he goes, my caloric – I can't even do it in Brando. He's like, my caloric converter is running low. And then she just picks up a bucket of ice water and pours it in the top. He's like, ooh, that's better. Like, it's like, this, what the fuck is going on? What is going on?
Do you think his character really was allergic to the sun?
No.
Nope.
Do you think Marlon Brando didn't want to be
Brando
the sun?
Insisted on the white face.
And I
think that was another Brando thing.
And another thing
another
thing they say about Brando and the white face is he wanted to do the white face so his stand-in could do most of his job because he couldn't tell the difference if it was two people in white face.
Wow.
That no one wanted to be here.
Mm-mm.
David Soulis didn't even go to the premiere of the movie.
Wow.
He was so embarrassed by it.
Oh.
There's so many things. I wrote down. So at one point when Marlon Brando does die, which is very quickly, then Val Kilmer takes over as Marlon Brando, which based on what you just said, seems like a spiteful performance of Marlon Brando. It's really aggressively, it seems like he hates Marlon Brando.
Yeah, he's just doing a insulting impression. For the rest of the movie, Val Kilmer never speaks as Val Kilmer again.
Yes.
He puts on whiteface and he's just doing Brando while trying to fuck animal women. Like, yes. Like he's trying to sleep with, he's like, gets them all to have an orgy, and he's sitting in this chair, like about to have sex with like Pig Lady.
And by the way, some of these animals, by the way, let's just hear a little bit of Val Kilmer doing his Brando.
Shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that,
that is
in
not
thine
Brando.
Own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam that is in thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote of thy brother's eye. Neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet.
Okay, so that's basically for, I would say, the last third of the movie is all that. And I had subtitles on, and sometimes it would just say inaudible. Inaudible. The subtitles was having trouble getting Val Kilmer. It is his performance, and I don't know what his goal was. Like, if he's a drug addict, like, he's wearing microchips on his head. Let's talk about the first introduction to him. He's on a boat, but then when they get to the island, he picks up a bunny, sniffs its head.
Oh, yeah.
And then
that was terrible.
Breaks the this movie was particularly hard for
but
you.
But why did he do that? I still don't understand that.
He said they were going to eat meat
because they wouldn't eat meat on the island, and he wanted to eat meat. And I think probably if you were to ask the filmmakers, it would have been like, oh, because there's all these rules of not killing on the island, and Val Kilmer doesn't abide by those rules for some reason.
Right.
But then they don't cash that in any way, shape, or form.
No, and then there's also someone else out there killing rabbits too, which
there's
is like
one of the creatures.
One of the creatures
who dies.
Who I believe is called like
Maling.
Maling, yeah. But Maling isn't the leader of the resistance.
No,
apparently,
her boyfriend is
in the original script. Maling had a very large part, which is why that actor gets like fourth billing, I think.
Got it.
And he got replaced by the littlest man in the world because Marlon Brando insisted on having more. So he was supposed to be like this thing, this bigger part that like Marlon Brando really smiled upon. And then Brando just fell in love with this little man and was like, I want more of him. I want more of him. And then so that guy just turned into a guy to dress up like a cat every day. Drink from a fountain once and get shot in the head.
And by the way, just to continue this story of the movie not making any sense. Also, Val Kilmer refused to say his lines, so he started giving all of his lines to Ron Perlman. So Ron Perlman's character is kind of what Val Kilmer's character would be because Val Kilmer wouldn't say
his
script.
Who was Ron Perlman in this?
He was the sayer of the law.
He was full goat makeup.
Yeah, the goat man.
That was Ron Perlman.
I did not recognize him.
Just because the goat
man. Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
The sayer of the law, as his character is called. This is a movie, by the way, besides Moreau, and because it's in the title, I could not tell you anyone's names. Mei Ling, I remember.
The other one was, who was the leader of the animal people?
I'm looking.
Miho,
yeah. Lomai.
Was the one who died.
Well, by the way, here's an issue I have with these character names. Like there's like names like Myla or whatever, Lomai, Mei Ling, and then there's another character just called Hyena. Hey, Hyena. They keep on calling him Hyena. I'm like, why didn't they bother to name this guy? Everyone else got
What was weird too is I could never tell what these creatures, I mean, maybe you guys could, but I couldn't tell like where they had started off. Like, I didn't know what animals they started off as.
No.
They were just these very strange-looking creatures. It was you couldn't tell that was once a hyena.
To me, it feels like he took his people who were working in his lab and then injected them with hyena juice. But then at the end, one of them goes like, I was walking on four legs, and that was easier than walking on two. So I'm like, all right, I guess they were all
animals. They were all animals. Well, what was weird, too, about them is the sounds hyena made when he was, you know, going crazy and killing people. He, at one point, it really did sound like he was just making sounds that were like, yeah!
Well, and speaking of the sounds that that also make no sense was clearly they were working with natives. And Val Kilmer was like, I'm not going to learn that. Because Kilmer's language is like, ba 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 ba. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Like he just, if you listen to him, he's like, ba-ba, ba-ba. And these other people are speaking, I'm just generalizing, saying maybe it's Thai, maybe it's, you know, Vietnamese, I don't know, but they're speaking much more complex language. And he's just like, ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Like he's not doing any work at all to cover it up. I rewound it twice to hear him do it. Just like, ba-ba-ba.
That's also the in that scene when they get. That's when they take David Thewlis off the boat and the way. So they find him, they get him on the ship, and like, oh, I gotta go here. Then they'll drop you off. And then the way he gets David Thewlis onto the island of Dr. Moreau is David was basically, I'll just ride with these guys back to the mainland. And he's like, no, these are real party animals. Yeah. They've taken a liking to you. This arbitrary, weird, like gay rape threat that comes in out of nowhere. It just makes you go, oh God, Val Kilmer, what yeah. the? And then that's just it. That's just a thing that you're supposed to accept as if they're being like, well, here's the island. It's just a fact of life. If you're on a boat, you'll probably get attacked. Sexually.
Why not just have that raft end on the island? Like, why? Like, what? Just make it real simple.
Yeah.
Washes up on the island, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have to get that. But that boat interlude is nothing.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it. Like, there's no reason to say that you might get raped by these wonderful sailors.
There's also the movie is so crazy that like you start to remember the stuff that didn't cut it for like the top 10 crazy things, like when. This matters not at all in the plot, and in any other movie would be the craziest thing, where David Thewlis is trying to escape earlier on, and he finds a boat, and it's filled with 3-inch tall rat people with spears.
Oh yeah.
And then you're like, ah, and he gets it, and he runs away, and then you never see these 3-inch rat people again. Yes. That's just a thing that happens like a montage of walking down a New York street in a rom-com. Like, you're just like, oh, don't worry about the rat people.
and that rat person scene is built up as like a very like, dun-dun-dun, yeah. And they never come back.
See him.
And I feel like they only had enough money to maybe complete that section of the rap people.
Oh, I mean, they were like, again, I didn't know what was happening, but the one scene that did seem tender and kind of connected was when Marlon Brando had the pot on his head and his daughter was turning into
a cat, a kitty cat.
A cat, I guess.
Meow, meow.
Because he did.
When she gets her neck broken, meow.
He did seem remorseful. And he did. I thought, well, something's happening on screen. I don't know what it is. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel, but it did seem like they were in the same scene together and they were...
Well, I felt like Marlon Brando felt that way for the world's littlest man, too, yeah. Because when the littlest man goes to shake David Thewlis' hand, he's like, shake it. Shake his hand. He's the world's littlest man. You should do him the honor of at least shaking his hand. Like, he really wanted that connection.
And for the, like, so if you had to, like, pick, okay, yeah, who is the hero of this movie, you'd probably go, I guess they think it's David Thewlis.
Yeah.
One of the first things you see David Thewlis do when he is brought to the island is peep out a window. They're like, hey, just stay in here. Firuza Balk is, like, dancing. And he, like, creeps out the window and, like, walks slowly up so that she can't hear him and crouches down watching so a creepy. Stranger do a sexy dance. And then when she turns around, he's like, oh, I'm not being creepy. Like,
and then immediately.
Scared.
No, she's terrified. I would be too. It doesn't matter if you're a cat lady.
And then immediately he goes to Val Kilmer. And by the way, just so you know, if you've not seen this movie, she looks nothing like a cat lady. Like,
oh, no.
She just looked like a human. And
I did love that dancing. I thought it was quite good.
And he turns to Val Kilmer. Like, she's gorgeous. Like, he's ready to get it on. Yeah. But it's unclear if Val Kilmer wants to get it on with her, too. Again, I feel like there's a lot of... The script definitely, I'm sure, had payoffs at certain points. Richard Lester worked on this movie for 4 years and was fired in the first 4 days and then burned all the production boards so no one could see what he was working towards.
Wow.
So
there's a lot of anger that comes through in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense that the last 30 minutes are just monkeys, hyenas, swine, bulldog people running around with bats chasing two people who are not fighting.
No.
Who weren't trying to harm them.
No, like there's like, okay, I could give you like, I
Val
guess
Kilmer and Marlon
Val
Brandon.
Kilmer's like, Marlon Brando gets eaten real fast. And then Val Kilmer, I guess he's been drugging everybody and heavily implied having sex with the pig ladies.
Yeah.
Okay. This guy who just – his plane crashed, there's no reason for everyone to want to kill this guy.
No.
All he's doing is wearing incredibly ill-fitting clothes and like walking around. I think the premise
and
of his
clothes –
And the
girl is one of them,
yeah.
Really.
So, June, you were saying that you liked the scene between Firuza Balk and Marlon Brando, right? Let's listen to what Firuza Balk had to say about her experience with Marlon Brando.
Just one day I said, can we talk? And he said, what is it, dear? And I said, in terms of our characters and how they relate, I'd love to have some time to do that. And he said, no, this is all insane. I'm getting paid. You're getting paid. None of the scripts make any sense. So why worry? You know, just relax. Do what you're doing. You're beautiful. Don't worry about it. And I said, but I mean, how the characters relate. Isn't there... Nah, I didn't read the script.
So that's a little insight.
Wow.
I bet what you're picking up in that scene, why you like it, is because I bet he just liked Fairuza Balk.
Yeah.
So he was just being genuinely like, well, it's very possible that at his beach house, he would also be happy if Fairuza Balk put ice in his
head.
But by the way, that and ice in his head was, and I think he was really getting a massage there. I don't think, the same way, like, he literally wore that pot on his head, not as a character choice, but because he was hot.
So he's just in the scene and it's like, I'd like to have ice on my head if I'm going to have to sit here anyway, and I'd like to be massaged.
And the whole twist of this movie, I guess maybe is that the point of it, is that when the animals, like, take out their chips where Marlon Brando has power over them, they immediately become Marlon Brando. Or he, like, the leader just becomes Marlon Brando. It's like, no, I'm going to keep all the chips in, and now you're all going to worship me. I'm your god
now.
That
was strange.
Because it would seem like they were, like, in Planet of the Apes, I love it because, like, oh, we're leading the revolution. We're all equal, and we're taking it over. And in my mind, it's like, now let's all get on a boat, and let's go to the United States, and then we'll take over. But here, it's like, no. I'm going to take over and I'll just be Marlon Brando now, and then you all work for me in my house. Like, I mean, that basically seemed like the plan. There was no union here. It was just sort of like, his plan was just to kind of be the leader.
It's also like, if you tried to like do story beats of this movie, you'd have like two. Like, man gets to island, Marlon Brando gets eaten. The end. Like, because it's just a series of scenes.
It's also weird to me, sorry to interrupt, Alex, but that they... So when Hyena knows where his chip is because he saw the ashes of his lover's chip, of his lover's body, and saw the chip. So then he finds his own chip. But then it seems like the rest of the animals don't know where their chips are and need someone else to come in and take out their implant.
Which, by the way, is attached, I think, to their ribs. Which means that guy just like fished around at his ribs and pulled it out.
Really got in there.
And he held on to it through major sequences. He held on to like a bloody dripping chip.
There are two different moments in the movie where he holds up and goes, no pain. Like two times. I get that once. You know, I'm smart enough to understand what's happening.
And by the way, sometimes he's saying like, no pain. And the other time's like, tell them to worship me as a god. It's like, wait, you were that functional and speaking? Like the line of where these animals were and, you know, and the orgy where, you know, where also Val Kilmer, seems to be no reason why they had to kill Val Kilmer either.
Well, I don't know what. To me, I couldn't tell. Does Marlon Brando know all of these creatures are on drugs? Or is this just Val Kilmer's way of.
It seemed like, I don't know. It just seemed like, because he has some sort of throwaway, we give him a bunch of mushrooms. Like this weird line. And so it's unclear if Val Kilmer, there's probably because Marlon Brando refused to do scenes with Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
There's no understanding of how they feel about each other. You cannot tell.
You don't understand their relationship. You don't understand what's going on. You don't understand why Val Kilmer was out at sea in the first place with this other band of people. Because if he needed DNA, he could have gotten it from anyone on that boat.
Yep. Like, it also seems strange that our two main characters are upset when Val Kilmer's dead.
Yeah,
they seem very surprised and disappointed to see that
he's only been a thorn in their side and against them. And then the other thing was, how about the little one of Marlon Brando's sons, the one in the white tuxedo, not the black tuxedo, who was the polite one, who worked on the controls? He's like, oh, I'm very polite.
Yeah.
That kind of like he's like one of the C-3PO of the monkey people, and he. During like the final battle sequence is just kind of walking around in white, just like, oh, what's happening? But also he's not viewed as like the level-headed person. No one, there's no distinction. They're all like one monkey's running around with a baseball bat because in a previous script they were starting a baseball team.
No.
That's the truth. And then I was like, very, very, it's not often that you get to see people in that much costuming. Like, I felt like the hyena man really was scene chewing at certain points, too. His yells. And there's that scene by the dock. I was like, all right, let's tone it back just a little bit. Just bring it back.
I would say the only person in this movie that I think I was like, I like watching you doing what you're doing. And I think he knew what was getting into was the bad Brando dreadlocked usher guy, the one because he was like,
great.
You're doing something good, guy, because I think you could see in his eyes a little bit like, well, you know what, I'm going to go down with this ship and I'm going to have some fun. And he just plays this kind of sadistic, dead-eyed stare. And he, I think, sincerely does a good job in this movie.
Too. I like him. And I do. I will applaud that. I like David Thewlis in the sense that he acted like I think any of us would have acted. Like in that first scene, he's like, what the fuck is going on? No! Yeah. I am not shaking that little man's hand. No, no. Like when he is confronted with some crazy shit, he's like, what? Like, he really is doing everything but what?
And now, by the way, now that I know that the little man was indeed a little person, I think he did an amazing job.
I feel like we can't not play a clip of Brando. This is just Brando playing the piano. And this is a scene that was parodied in Austin Powers where Mini-Me is playing a piano and Dr. Evil is playing a piano. This is where it came
from. That's exactly what's happening in this scene, too. They did not extend that in Austin Powers. They did not add an element to it. That is just what happens
exactly
in this film
the same.
Straight.
So here we go. So Mini-Me is on top of the piano on a smaller piano.
Father, I must ask a question.
Please.
What am I? A good father. Yes, we are not like you. What are we?
You are my children. You are all my children. See, now, I think perhaps it might be helpful if we would go over there and then we could discuss this and I could explain to you exactly. Now, be calm, please, please.
I want to tell you something.
Tell me.
And this is right before.
Why you make the pain?
And basically, it gets
if
eaten here, but this.
Children.
The little man passes him a baton.
You see, you are my children, but law is necessary.
If there is no more pain.
This is when he shows his chip.
Yeah. Well, that's. Yeah.
Is there no more law?
As you see, Brando doesn't even do much. This is his big final scene. He really doesn't do that much talking besides saying, you're my children, you're my children. And that's pretty much, if you were to distill, that's all he kind of says. He never really gets into it more.
His first appearance is being carried on a rickshaw thing by four people, like with mosquito netting all around him, like this weird Pope, full
fabric.
White face.
Fabric.
Yeah, just draped in like a weird aunt's window dressings as he like comes in.
I do want that level of sunblock though.
Oh, I mean, he is taking care of his skin. Yeah. At that age, you have to. He's a smart man.
Our faces are our fortunes after all.
And I did feel like, I thought he was never going to lose it, but I did like the fact that he in the next scene, he's just wiping it off. He is taking it off.
And he does a crappy job of it. Yeah. He gets like half of it off, and it's clear Brando's just like, I don't want to keep taking this off. I'll just leave half of it on.
You notice that Brando did wear hats throughout the movie.
Sure.
This is the reason why he wore hats. This is one of the producers talking about Marlon Brando.
I've dealt with some very, very difficult actors in my life, but I have never, ever dealt with somebody like Marlon Brando.
Who said that? I'm so
sorry. We're driving, and he stops the car and says, I think what we should do is just close down the production, and you and I are going to rewrite the script, and we'll spend 6 or 8 weeks rewriting it, because I have some ideas about how Dr. Moreau should be wearing a hat all the time, and at the end of the movie takes off his hat, and he's actually a dolphin. So then I knew we were in serious, serious bad shape.
So that's a level.
Wait a second. How would you even show that on
a
head?
A dolphin tail sticking out the back of his
like,
head.
I would imagine like
a blowhole maybe.
Oh, I thought he would have like a fin, but yeah, right. Yeah, a blowhole is better.
Honestly, though, imagine. I think he was right. Like, I honestly think that Marlon Brando might have been right. Because if this movie had ended and he had taken off a hat and gone, and water come out, I absolutely think it would have been a better movie 100%. I think I'm with Marlon Brando.
It would have been a choice.
Oh, my God. That is funny.
Because you're right. There is no.
That is funny.
You know, I mean, yeah. There's.
That
I mean,
is funny.
It's this movie. Obviously, we had an opinion about this movie. There are people out there that have another point of view. It's time for second opinions.
Opinions like lips and assholes. You know we all got them. Second opinions. Second Opinions.
These are opinions culled from Amazon. These are 5-star reviews from Amazon. First one, right out the gate, from Anonymous. Father loved it. 5 stars. All right? I guess that's how it goes here. This one is from Raven Baton. I prefer this version of the movie, although it's probably because it's the first one I've seen. Great story. It could happen, question mark. Or has it happened? A definite must-see. First of all, I like that he prefers this version. There's three. This is the third version. He prefers this one out of all of them, even though it's the only one.
I want to see the other versions.
One's from like the 30s and one's from like the 70s.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay.
This one from CCCC. It's twisted. It's dark. It's amazing. If you like Val Kilmer, sci-fi, or just hanging out with a bunch of people who think they're God, you'll love this movie. Of course, 5 stars. Yeah.
I do like hanging out.
I mean, everyone has got
a bunch of people.
And sci-fi? Oh, well, sign me up.
And from Brooklyn Lacacon, okay, this is an intense one that I kind of pulled down. Highly recommended. This is not fiction. This is happening now in the underground of the black projects of the government and all paid for with your tax dollars and government drug money. 5 stars. All right. Well, thank you, Brooklyn Lacan, for letting us know that there are hyena swine out there. And finally, this is from Bad Moron. We're all animals, but some of us are too afraid to see it. When you feel anger, rage, frustration, or the feeling of blood, it's your true nature scratching at the surface, but only few give in. Man has only been out of the jungle for 2,000 years, and the animal is still inside all of us, but it rarely sees the light of day. 5 stars.
Ooh, but by the way, true. But was that the point of the movie? Because the movie's, for the most part, turning animals into humans, I think.
It's very unclear.
Yeah, and based on your point, if it was originally written because of vivisection, it's definitely it's putting a stamp on something else. I think you need a lead character in this. You need Moreau to be charismatic or evil, and he is neither.
No,
he is
he's
not.
He's just allergic to the sun.
He's allergic to the sun. And he kind of likes all these.
Well, and I would argue you need someone on set who is willing to read one line that explains the movie. You need any actor who is willing to say, what we are doing is this, and not just going, well, it's really hot outside.
Yes, it is yellow. Like, or, you know, and listening to his Walkman, wearing cowboy boots and a Navajo skirt. I mean, this movie is bad behavior personified. It really, like, the cool kids are like, fuck it, we'll make our own movie. And this is what happened.
And we didn't get to talk about that much, but the amount of thigh that Val Kilmer is showing throughout the entire movie is all thigh. He's wearing possibly like this, like what looks like a throw, like tied around his waist with maybe nothing on underneath. And he's constantly sitting with his feet up so that poor David Thewlis across from him, you can tell, isn't enjoying what he has to do.
Just look at his balls. But this is Val Kilmer, like you said, in peak shape. And you know that he could just knock down, you know, a bunch of these pig ladies. He could just totally nail them.
He did great for himself on that island.
He's getting all that pig swine. Well. Anything else that we did not mention that's worthy of talking about?
I mean, like there's lots of things we didn't mention because the movie's so insane.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like right, he kisses a pig lady, and not even David Thewlis comments on it. Everyone's sort of like, that seems fair.
Sure. Well, and he does it. It's such an interesting moment because it's not in a close up. It's in like kind of a wide shot when
he's
doling out.
I think the extra was surprised. My guess is
too.
That extra was like,
Bernie,
whoa,
I do too.
What the hell?
Bernie, I do too. It's a weird moment.
Yeah.
Like the extra's not really going in
and
for it.
And they hustle out the screen real fast. They are gone.
They are ghosts like immediately. Like it's such a strange moment. And I think he did improvise that. I do not think that was right.
Well, I mean, Fernie, were you on set on NTSF when we had Ray Liotta there, and he just tackled one of the extras to the ground, and it was sort of like, yeah, that's what. Like, I think these actors are like, I'm going on my instinct. I'm going to make out with this girl. Like, that's it.
Who is already probably she's been dressed as a pig for probably 12 hours.
If it was a lady.
Like, in this rainforest, and the last thing she needs is some guy to physically grab her, kiss her, when you know, like, the second AD was just like, just take the thing and walk over here.
Yeah. Do not speak.
Yeah, you know
Do
she's going,
speak.
I just got fired, and I just got fired because of that.
Well, also, the weird thing about those pig ladies is that the two of them seemed elderly.
Yeah.
They also seemed like very old and gray haired.
Well, Val Kilmer, literally before he started this movie, was served divorce papers. And I think he was showing his wife, don't worry about me.
Yeah,
I am
gonna be
fine.
I'm
going to be up in pig guts.
And he gets what he wants, which is an orgy where it is just him in the chair and then people like faking animal sex all around him.
Yeah.
Just gratuitous grinding.
And why isn't he involved in it? Because then he's a voyeur.
He's just watching.
Yeah. He's just watching him from the chair doing a bad Brando or a good Brando. I will also bring up the just again to bring it out into the open. These animals revolt against Moreau. And Moreau does nothing, seemingly nothing bad to them, except when one murders another, he murders him. Like they do a trial. That's the
He doesn't even want to. Guy does.
Yes.
He gets upset. He's sincerely sad that this animal got killed. He is sincerely trying to do the right thing.
He was going
to
shock him, right?
Yep.
So what do these animals have so bad? What are they so mad
at? They're not free, babe. They're not free.
But they don't want to be free at the end of the movie. They're not like
No, one
they're
of
like
them
burn
doesn't.
The
that
dock.
Was a bad that was a bad animal. I do think they want what the Lost say, or whatever that guy's name is, Ron Perlman says at the end, is like, we just need to be what we are. Mm-hmm. Now that we're this way, like, let us
just
live.
But that was when David Foulis was like, very much like Dorothy, like, I'll come back for you, and we'll have a lot more fun. And like, why? Get the fuck out of here, David Foulis. But he's also like, but to me, it's like, but that wasn't ever the point. It didn't seem like that was, it seemed like they were living a fine life. Some were dressed in tuxes.
Maybe it is a successful movie. Maybe that is the point of The Island Dr. Moreau, is that there is no point. Animal, human, we're all just floating around on an island.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What are we going to do?
Oh, by the way, I want to talk about one little scene, too. If you do watch it, when they do a close-up of Val Kilmer's eyes and David Thewlis' eyes, clearly ADR because they did not have, because it was like, there's an important plot point that comes out there. It's like, I threw it away, something that had to move the plot forward. And they're doing the scene head to head, and then they just cut in really tight. And the movie is not stylized besides this part, really tight to both of their eyes, and you just hear both their lines over eyes. I threw it away, and it's like, what? And then it cuts back out to the watch.
they also do an insane thing early where they try to show, it's when he's floating around that life raft, and they want to show the heat of the sun, and they cut to a still photograph. It's not footage, it's a still photograph of the sun because the clouds are just like doing the shimmer of when it's like just one thing.
All right, that's so amazing. Would you recommend seeing this movie?
Yes. It's insane.
Yeah,
it is insane.
I would recommend it.
Wonderfully bananas.
I feel like you have to see it, and I think you have to watch a documentary right after.
A documentary,
absolutely.
I need
to see that. I will watch that tonight.
The documentary is called Lost Soul, The Doom Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. Yeah. So check that out. They're both on iTunes. Alex, do you have anything to promote? Anything you want to talk about?
Oh, gosh. I guess not. I guess not right now. Right. Follow me on Twitter, at Fernie, Alex, all right, all right now. Great.
And my new show, Grace and Frankie, is out on Netflix, which you can watch, and they're all available. And
how many eps in there?
13 eps.
Who's in it?
Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Martin Sheen, Sam Waterston.
All-star cast.
And I'm at Ms. June Diane on Twitter. And you can rent or buy Ask Backwards on iTunes.
And I want to promote that NTSF SDSUV, which we've all been involved in. Fernie is a writer, actor, director of it. June, of course, is in it, and me. It's on Hulu now. All three seasons, you can watch them all. And there's no commercial interruptions because the shows are so short. And thank you to Alex Fernie. If you saw anything that we might have missed or things that we got wrong, you can send in your corrections and omissions to earwolf.com. Just go on to this forum for this episode, and then I'll read them in the mini episodes if they're good. If they're shitty, I'm not going to read them. You can also follow us on Twitter at HDTGM or on Facebook at How Did This Get Made. A big thanks to our engineer, Brett. A huge thank you to Avril Halley, who pulls all of our clips and watch both that and the documentary, this movie and the documentary. Nate Kiley does all of our research, and all the awesome designs on our Facebook page and our Twitter page are done by Leanna Waldron. She kicks ass. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you next week for a mini episode. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com.
The wolf dead.
Hey, I'm Arnie Niekamp, host of the Earwolf podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern, a fully improvised comedy chat show set in a magical world. I'm from Chicago, but my co-hosts are a talking badger.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, I'm actually a shapeshifter.
Yeah, it's complicated. I'm also joined by a talking wizard.
All wizards can talk, but I am the greatest talker of them all.
I'm trapped in a magical land, and instead of having adventures, every week we interview monsters and talking animals. Some of the great guests we've had on the show include Lauren Lapkus.
Paul F. Tompkins.
Travis McElroy.
Tawny Newsome. Felicia Day.
Sean and Hayes from Hollywood Handbook.
Zach and Jess from Off Book.
Scott Adsit. Janet Varney.
Matt Besser. Danielle Schneider. Todd Barry.
Gilbert Gottfried. All these guests and many, many more.
You can start from the first episode if you want to follow the whole journey.
You can jump in if you scroll through and you see a character that sounds interesting.
Or just listen to the most recent episode.
That's Hello from the Magic Tavern. Listen to it on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.